With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65.
63. With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
You got to understand that I don't come up with this stuff. I just forward it along. You wouldn't arrest a guy who's just delivering drugs from one guy to another.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Oh, yeah, you can milk anything with nipples.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, and 99.5 HD2. Joe Fortenbaugh at the bottom of the hour. Daily Wager ESPN host. Yeah, we're talking football gambling with our man Joe.
There's already some, I love the easy hard schedule rankings that come out the day after the release, and I buy into a lot of them.
I have the win totals, too.
Oh, give them to me. There's one team that stands out above the rest that when you look over their schedule, now again, it's the NFL, things can change. This team was kissed by the gods. Like, oh, how, what? They get that, what, huh?
Okay.
Yes.
The win projections I saw, and I, you know, their models are so analytically driven. By the way, I did a poll question. Which analytics person drives you the craziest, baseball, basketball, or football?
Somebody texted in and said, Teddy said they did do some practice, just very minimal. I think he said about 15 live reps a week, still insane. So they did practice, you know, once or twice. But
the clip I saw, he made it sound like they didn't do anything.
That makes no sense to me. Like, as an NFL team to never practice a 2-minute drill or never practice red zone offense, I refuse to believe that. Now, minimal practicing, I could see that, and that's still dumb.
I still think if you're having teams that are spending an entire day of the week on it.
Right, and it would have been one thing if Carolina, I know this wasn't the only reason Carolina had a down year last year, but it doesn't help when you kind of have this, let's think outside the box, and then you have a losing season.
By the way, early leader in the clubhouse on which analytics person drives you craziest is baseball.
Yeah.
I think baseball.
I think I agree with that.
I think baseball fan hates their sport the most of all the fans with analytics.
Yes. Most football fans, I would say, want more analytics in their game.
100%.
They wish their coaches weren't such fuddy-duddies and would go for it on fourth down.
And go for two more often because of the math.
And basketball, for the most part, can be exciting because it's like guys shooting more threes and that kind of stuff.
You can make an argument it hurts the game.
Sure, for bad teams to do it.
You got all these like Yusuf Nurkic is probably going to attempt at least 45 threes next year.
Yeah, did I see right that Cantor hit a three last night? Did I miss that live?
Oh, I must have missed that. I thought I watched the entire game. I didn't see that. Did you?
Hold on. Let me look.
Yeah.
Cantor
hit a three.
He hit a three.
What quarter?
I think the third.
It's the third quarter.
I thought he had a pretty.
I was cleaning up the kitchen and I heard through the TV speakers like Cantor for three. Oh. And I was like, did I hear that?
Maybe I missed that. He had a pretty forgettable game.
He didn't do much, but he hit a three. That kind of blew my mind. But baseball is easily the worst analytically. It's guys that want to hit nothing but home runs. Strikeouts are up. Nobody wants to get on base anymore. It's just, it's dumb. People look at random numbers and nobody knows what they mean. Like Babbitt, batting average, and balls in play. What the hell is that? Come on, give me the numbers I know.
Before I dive into the Blazers, I was going to say I saw the win projection, so they based it on the strength of schedule based on their metrics. This is what it's currently projected if these projections end up being correct. This is how the NFC West is going to stack up, and tell me how you feel about it. First place, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Second place, Arizona. Third place, Rams. Dead last, Seahawks.
I mean, that's not how it's going to end because I refuse to believe a Russell Wilson-led team's going to finish in last place. We do this to Seattle every year.
Every single year.
Most years they end up winning the division. So not going to finish in last. But way to ruin my tease, because the 49ers are the one team with the easiest schedule in the NFL.
Oh, I wasn't going to give away anything. You just did that yourself. I just was telling you what the NFC West projected standings was going
to
be.
That's why, like, if you would have asked me to give me your power rankings of the NFC West prior to the schedule release, I would never have put San Francisco in first place. Then you see their schedule and you say, yeah, I could see it.
Well, again, we play this game.
I know we do.
And that schedule crap. I hate the schedule crap.
I know we do. But some of these teams I feel fairly confident are not going to be good. And they play a lot of teams that could be drafting in the top seven next year.
We always say that. And Jalen Hurts is an all-pro quarterback. And maybe he becomes a franchise guy.
Maybe that's the case.
The Trailblazers are red hot and rolling, baby.
Woo-hoo!
We told you to take them plus two on the line yesterday on the app. I bet them on the money line. And they got off to a bit of a slow start. But they quickly recovered and they ended up pulling away and beating Utah pretty convincingly by the second half. They were up double digits most of the way. Melo had a big game. Dame had a big game. CJ was awesome. Nurkic had a good impact. And the Portland Trailblazers continue the winning ways. They have Phoenix tonight, so it's a big back-to-back situation. They're obviously playing with seeding. The Lakers narrowly won, and the Mavericks destroyed the Pelicans, so we're still playing that fun game of who's going to the play-in tournament.
Right.
Before getting into the Phoenix thing, just kind of your thoughts and seeing them beat Utah, the fifth time Utah's lost at home.
It's hard to overstate how big of a win that was. It really is. I don't care who was out for Utah. Portland had to play, you know, under those circumstances for a month and a half earlier this year with no CJ and no Nurk. So you're not going to apologize for beating a team without Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley. And the fact that they were able to overcome their slow start, because as you mentioned, I mean, early in that game, Utah came out, they jumped all over them. It was Nurkic flipping up kind of soft floaters around the rim. None of them were falling. They couldn't buy a bucket. It's like, oh God, I've seen this movie before. I know how this movie ends, and it's not pretty. And the next thing you know, you look up, they kind of settled in. They were down by seven at the end of the first quarter, so not ideal, but it felt like it could have been worse than that early on. The second unit came in. Melo had a huge night last night, and he's been big for them the last couple of weeks. Credit where it's due.
Somebody told me to tell you to suck it.
I don't want to do that, but I will give him credit where it's due. He's been playing great the last couple of weeks. They outscored him by 10 in the second quarter, and you kind of settled in. That bucket that we played earlier at the end of the first half was awesome to see. And then to go into the second half after kind of regaining your footing and to really dominate. I mean, they dominated that second half. That second half to me, I went in thinking, oh my God, this is going to be playoff atmosphere basketball and it's going to come down to the wire, because that's seemingly what the Blazers do in all of these games. And I ended up spending half my time looking at my computer, they were in control. They built a double digit lead. It never really was in doubt. You know, Utah would cut it to eight and CJ would come back or Dame would come back and hit a bucket on the other end. And I'm with you on Nurkic having an impact. 15 boards was great. 6 assists was great. Didn't have a great shooting night. Hard to score on one of the best defensive players in the NBA. The story of last night, despite what Melo did in the second unit, was your starting backcourt. Those are the guys that are always going to be the driving force for you. If you're going to make somehow or find a way into a playoff run this year, it's to be led by Dame and CJ. They were lights out last night, and it was really fun to watch.
Swigard screamed at me about Nurkic. I thought he played a good game. I'm not great, but good.
I mean, he just had those offensive moments early that are frustrating about him.
I know the touch stuff early, dude.
Like,
you're 30 pounds bigger than Gobert.
Yeah, go dunk on him.
Or back him down. Make him earn something.
Don't. He goes too laterally or horizontally to the rim rather than taking one extra power dribble and going to the rim with force. He takes himself from being 7'1 to 6'7.
Yes, he does.
He makes himself incredibly guardable by power forwards that should never be able to handle him once he gets a foot in the paint. And it's one of the most frustrating things that there is to watch the Blazers right now.
Yeah, Swigard screamed at me at 5:20 a.m. about Derek Favors defending Nurkic. And I was like, you know, they won the game, right?
They did win the game. It was a huge win.
Talk about a turnaround season. I feel like Jason Quick had a story in the midst of that long losing streak where they lost out of 8 of 11 or whatever the hell that was, where we all just completely wrote him off. I feel like Quick had a headline tease, something to the effect of, the end is near for the Portland Trailblazers. Quick just had a story, and I'm sure it's going to be a good one. It says, Blazers have won 9 of 10, and Lillard has a feeling about the way Portland is getting it done he hasn't felt for years.
I mean, this is what they do seemingly
up
every
and down,
year.
Baby. Up and down.
This is it. This is, you know, it reminds me a lot, and I'm not connecting the dots and saying they're going to make it that far. It reminds me a lot of the year that they made it to the conference finals.
There it is.
No, just because I'm not saying, stop it. I'm not saying they're going to go to the conference finals. I'm just saying that, like, that year, fans were really down for most of the season because you were coming off of a sweep at the hands of the New Orleans Pelicans when you were the three seed. Like, that was embarrassing, and people wanted Stotts gone. You wanted changes to happen. Paul Allen was still alive.
Paul Allen almost did it. He almost said, we're done.
He almost blitzed over. Hit the detonate button and blew everything up. Like, this is stupid. We can't even win a playoff game. Myers Leonard is getting the final looks in, like, game 2. What the hell is happening right now?
And oh, I remember that.
They drew up a play for Myers in game 2, and they fell down 2-0, lost both games at home. Like, that entire season, everybody, this sucks when you go on a bad streak. And I think they ended up, what, the 4 seed or the 3 seed that year, whatever it was. But there was that kind of real pessimistic feeling. And they've somehow clicked it into gear at the right time. And I don't know if that's going to be the case this year or not. But it's much better to be playing your best basketball going into the playoffs than it is to be going in on one of those skids that they were on seemingly 3 weeks ago.
I'm with you. I'd rather go in feeling great than go in as a skid mark. But let me ask you. Do you ever, does it change your mind at all in any not way really. About how deep of a run, if at all, they can make? And I know there's a lot here, right? This is kind of a nuanced thing I'm throwing at you because I think there's two schools of thoughts, and I actually think you should go in the middle here. I totally get people that don't buy this because if you look at the teams they've played and who have been missing when they've played them or who they've played, there's a good argument to say, is it really as impressive as it looks? But there's the other school of thought of you can only control your schedule, right? You can't control who's playing and when they're playing and who's not playing. You play who's on your schedule, and they've won 9 of 10.
They have.
And they've kind of locked into something here with Dame, CJ, and Norm. Nurk has had some good games in this mix.
Yeah, his numbers have been great over the last 3 weeks.
Melo has been really good. I mean, I looked it up, the advanced analytics of the 5-player lineup, the starting lineup, in their last 15 games. I mean, you're talking about like a 103 rating on defense. You're talking about a 117 offensive rating. This team is, their starting lineup's pretty efficient. And I see both sides of the argument here. I'm probably somewhere in the middle. Like, I think it's amazing. I think it's good. You want to play this way going into postseason play. I won't pick them to beat the Clippers if they get that matchup.
No, similar to that Western Conference Finals year, there is nothing what you do in the regular season really matters to a lot of fans. That year, Portland ended up, what were they, the 4 seed when they made that run, right? I think they were the 4-5 OKC Portland matchup.
I thought it was a 3.
Maybe it was
6.
A 3.
We wanted them to be the 4-5, and I thought Simon's game against the Kings put them to the 3, and the Thunder
that could
were
have been
the 6.
It. That could have
I'll
been
go
it.
Back and look it. Up,
but even then, though, that year, the reaction was what? Like, nothing you did in the regular season mattered because we were coming off of that sweep by New Orleans, and you had to go prove it. And I think there's a real vibe that way with Portland the rest of this season. It was a ton of fun to watch last night. It is awesome to see them win 9 out of 10, and they're playing undoubtedly their best basketball of the year. But largely, none of this matters until you get to the postseason. You can finish the season, you know, with a win against Phoenix and a win against Denver. That's great. If you lose in 5 games to the Clippers in the first round, or if you get...
Well, in that situation, you would play Denver, which I think if you beat Denver and Denver's trying the last game of the year...
Not necessarily, because if you end up in a 3-way tie, Dallas could still finish ahead of you in the standings.
Oh, the 4-5, you're right.
So you could still technically...
The Lakers would go to the play-in.
They could still technically have that. But I think that's a big part of how am I feeling come postseason time. A lot of it, and we know this, again, is about matchups, and it's about who you play. If you're playing the Clippers in the first round, my mind has not changed about how I expect that series to go. If you're playing Denver in the first round and you find a way into the 5 seed, yeah.
Well, by the way, I looked
expectations
up.
Change a bit.
That game that Simons had put him at 3 seed.
The 3 seed, okay.
And I remember specifically if that they lost that game, I think they would have been the 4. So the argument was, do you want the Thunder with Westbrook and George, or do you want the Utah Jazz, who hadn't proved Jack's squat at that point?
That's right.
And I think everybody was kind of in on the Jazz thing. Simons goes off. I picked them to lose the Thunder series. I'm like, they're not going to win this. They're out in 6.
I did too.
1-5, 1-7, Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
It's that quick. I'm curious if people have changed their tune at all, or if you're not buying it, are you wait till playoffs and I need to see it in that moment person? We'll get into that. Joe Fortenbaugh, ESPN's Daily Wager. We'll talk some NFL gambling, what he sees from the schedule release, things he likes to bet early right now, and how the hell you bet these two teams. I have no clue. So he'll join us at 7:30. We'll get to those things next. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Big Kid Cudi fans on this show.
Back to back.
We got Joe Fortenbaugh coming up. I saw this one from Eric Griffith, who I think is writing now for Willamette Weekly. I don't know if that's a permanent basis, but he's a Blazers edge. He's a good follow for Blazer NBA stuff. He tweeted last night, with 41 wins, the Blazers have now surpassed their preseason over-under for the sixth time in 8 years, and they currently have the longest active playoff streak.
I remember having those conversations in December. It was a weird numbers this year because it's only a 72-game season. So
I think we stayed away. Did we stay away as a show? I can't remember what my opinion was on that.
Yeah, I don't either. I just remember having conversations about 40.5 and some folks feeling confident in both directions, feeling like this is a team that could finish in the top three in the West. Some people didn't like them at all and said it's probably not even a playoff team. You always get the run of the gamut, you know, opinions about Portland, but you've now hit your over out for last night's win.
Well, and I think context is always important. I also think it's important to be fair. And the hardest thing we have in our society is you don't have people willing to say I'm wrong. I was not correct in that. I don't know why we have that, but that's what it is. And what I'll say is, when CJ was out, when Nurkic was out, there was a lot of finger pointing, right? This team wasn't, there were games where they were struggling defensively. They were awful. They've been awful for most of the year. And yet, being on social media, and I get that there's some of you rolling your eyes, social media, I know it's not a fair snapshot, but it's the snapshot that sometimes we use, right? We're gauging what people are thinking in the moment. And if they lost a game and gave up 125 points without CJ, without Nurkic, without the full power of what the lineup was, even pre-Norm, you know, it was Terry's a bum, Terry sucks, this team sucks, instead of, hey, their lineup isn't healthy. And now they're beating teams whose lineups aren't healthy, and it's, well, you call me when they beat a team who's out. There doesn't seem to be a consistency there. And I think it's fair to question how legitimate they may be now. And maybe you don't go all in and thinking what they can do in the postseason. I get that. But what you can't refute is they've been healthy and they have Norm involved now and they've played better. I mean, yeah, no Conley, no Mitchell. That's a huge offensive piece that Utah was missing last night. They still played a damn impressive defensive game against a long, really good shooting traditionally Utah team on the road. the credit needs to be given to them.
Yeah, I would say I think for the fringe fans that are like that are loud and vocal on social media, it's a lose-lose situation, right? You don't play well. If you only beat Houston by a couple of points, it's not good enough. If you lose games when you're not at full strength,
oh, that
the
was
team
a
is
big
terrible
thing too. The Houston game,
you didn't beat them by enough. I was just bummed because I wanted to go to bed earlier. That's the only thing I was upset about. And then if you beat a team like Utah without their stars, well, nice. You beat a team without their stars. It's a lose-lose situation, and there's nothing that you could do to ever really satisfy some of those fans in the team. The only thing that they could ever do is go on a deep playoff run. That'll shut everybody up because I don't know if anybody's really expecting that. We had a listener that texted in about Derek Jones Jr. too. Like, was he the guy holding the team back? They've turned a corner since benching him.
Are we bitching about that move by Terry anymore?
We're not bitching about that move. I also think that's a bit of an oversimplification and to say that it was all on Derek Jones Jr. Like,
no way it was.
He is anemic offensively. We all know that he can't score, but I think he brings something in terms of his cutting on the baseline defensively. Right. He brings something to the team. What has mostly changed, I think, is the further gelling in of Norman Powell, who wasn't great last night, but he's been a really good player for you in that three-guard lineup, which has worked for them, despite all the criticisms on the trade deadline day. The other big piece of this, though, and I brought it up a million times and I'm going to continue to do it, is Yusuf Nurkic. Nurkic getting back to playing at a pre-injury level where you can really count on him. I know he didn't have a great offensive night last night, but in a non-offensive night, he was 3 of 14 from the floor. Like, that would be atrocious. Then you look at, he had 15 rebounds. He dominated the glass. He had 5 offensive boards. He had 6 assists, 3 steals, and 4 blocks.
I thought he was really good defensively.
Like, he was all over the place. And I was just scrolling through the quick piece in the commercial break, and he, you know, it highlights Nurkic, and he says he someday wants to win Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know if he can do that, but he's only 26. Not going to happen. But sure, he brings something, though, that this team was desperately missing. And having him and Norman Powell in the starting lineup, with Powell finally feeling comfortable with his role and Nurkic getting back to the way that he somewhat used to look, you're like the 15th or 16th best defensive team in the NBA. That's what has mostly changed for this group. It's not the benching of Derek Jones Jr. Melo has been great off the bench. That was the one thing that they always needed to change. We knew the offense could score. We knew CJ could cook. Dame's going to go get his. Like, right, we knew all that. But when you're one of the historically worst defenses in the history of the NBA, it doesn't matter. You can go out there and score 125 a night. You're going to give up 135. And they lost a lot of games that way. Now they're playing defense at an average level compared to an offense that's playing an elite level, and you've won 9 out of 10 games.
Yeah, I'm rooting hard for them to get Denver in round one. You pay the Clippers. I'm not going to have a ton of faith, but I've always said Dame will always have a certain percentage that I think you should just give him out of respect. Mm-hmm. He's proven me wrong in the playoffs before. I think he's proven other people wrong in this city in the playoffs before. The Clippers are such a tough matchup for them. It's just in so many ways that you get Denver and I'm in. I'm probably going to pick them to win the series. I don't even care if I'm wrong. Like, yeah, they have the league MVP and Michael Porter's great. They don't have, I think, the horses to stop your three-guard lineup. Now, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. They have Phoenix tonight. Pretty big one. You win one more and here you go.
Totally.
But these last two, and I tweeted this last night, it's not even a debate anymore. The debate is settled. The play-in tournament has made this season and the end of it substantially more entertaining. One of our P1s, Jeff, I tweeted about it and he responded and said, "I normally these games, they don't matter. They're boring. They're irrelevant." And I'm with him. I would have paid attention last night, but wouldn't have really paid attention.
Maybe you're the 5, maybe you're the 6, maybe you're the 7, but you're in.
Dude, I was glued on my couch, drinking a seltzer in my dad life, and I'm watching every second of this game except the Cantor 3, evidently.
Yeah.
And it's not even a debate. It makes it more entertaining, more intriguing. Big one tonight, and I don't know how much faith I have because of the back-to-back situation, and Phoenix has something to play for.
It's not many back-to-backs that are tougher than going Utah to Phoenix. As you mentioned, Portland beating Utah gives Phoenix a bit of an incentive tonight. Phoenix gets a win. They got a crack at getting that number one seed. And I don't know how important that is to them. Maybe they want to try and avoid the Lakers, thinking the Lakers will be the 7 seed. So a lot on the line for both teams tonight. I just was happy to see. I think sometimes you get teams in these situations that you end up backing your way in. Like, you don't necessarily take care of your business, but somebody else falls short, and that's how you end up securing your spot. I didn't want Portland to get the, you know, avoid the play-in based on that. I didn't want them to avoid the play-in by losing last night, but the Lakers lose to the Knicks, and then they lose to you. You know what I mean? Like, no, go take care of your business. You control your own destiny, and it was great to see him realize that last night, and now you get one more win or one more loss combined, and you're avoiding that play-in situation, which we all thought that they were for sure destined for a couple of weeks ago.
So, Weigart, are you watching these games? Or are you still boycotting from 2 years ago?
No. Okay. It was all in. Yeah. Watching.
Why didn't you bet? Why did you second guess that?
I had no feel for that game whatsoever. I thought Utah was going to pose more of a problem defensively, and early on it looked like it, and then they tweaked something or got the message.
They just got it going, yeah.
And figured it out. So,
all right, well, we'll have an update on the Pac-12 commissioner story. John Wilner had that one of the Mercury News, so we'll dive into that coming up. But coming up next is the Daily Ticker. The NFL schedule released, the Week 1 schedule released. We got it all here. Over-unders, win totals, and whatnot. Joe Fortenbaugh, Daily Wager host on ESPN. They've got a special radio show tonight on that. He'll join us for the Daily Ticker. We'll get his thoughts on what stuck out in the NFL schedule release and talk a little sports gambling with Joe Fortenbaugh next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, Daily Ticker time on a Thursday. Thanks for being with us. It's absolutely beautiful outside. We're loving it. Let's talk some gambling, shall we? The NFL released their schedule. It's always weird because teams release it, and then ESPN does it later at night. And then people are leaking it. I think the whole Patriots schedule got released. But the first thing we think of when we see it is
gambling.
Like over-unders. What are the lines on week one? We did it yesterday. The week one schedule got released. We were talking about lines all day on the show. Joining us now to discuss that and more is Joe Fortenbaugh of ESPN, the Daily Wager. By the way, they're going to have a special show tonight over on 910 ESPN Portland at 6 p.m., a special Daily Wager looking at all the NFL props, over-unders, all that good stuff for the upcoming season at Joe Fortenbaugh on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Joe, thanks for the time this morning. I'm curious, for a guy like you, the schedule gets released, what are the first things that you look for is from a gambling angle? What stands out to you the most when you first look at it?
Great question. First thing I want to do, and this takes some time, I look for the spots, also known as the situations in gambling parlance, right? I want to find games, individual games, in which teams are either going to be at a significant advantage or disadvantage. I think we've all played that game before with our favorite team. Maybe it's Seattle, maybe it's Philadelphia, where you look at the schedule and you go through and you're like, all right, we're hosting Washington, that's a win. We got to travel all the way to San Francisco, that's a loss, right? And we go through it, and then we say, all right, 10-6, it looks good. Not all games are created equal. For example, Dallas and Minnesota, that's an interesting game somewhat early in the season. Dallas is going to go to Minnesota when Minnesota's coming off the bye. That's a big advantage for Minnesota. You guys probably follow the Seattle Seahawks relatively closely. There's a big matchup against the Saints. I believe it's in week 7. Saints are coming off a bye for that game. And then the next week, the Seahawks play the Jaguars. The Jags are coming off the bye for that game. Meanwhile, there are situations where teams might play their third road game in 4 weeks. That's what I'm looking for. I'm trying to find the pitfalls for teams where I can exploit the advantage. One of the great ones that existed, and I haven't combed through the Thursday night games yet, but long travel dates for the road team on Thursday night has always been very perilous over history. So when the schedule first comes out, that's what I'm doing. I'm combing through, looking for the spots and the situations.
God, I got goosebumps. Thanks, Joe. You just got me even more excited for the upcoming season. Oh, man, I can't wait. Let me ask you, there's two teams that I'm staying away from. I have no clue what the hell's going on. I have no clue how to feel about them. I want to bet on one of them, but no thank you. How are you viewing bets or looks on the Packers and the Broncos right now, given what's currently up in the air?
All right, so that's an excellent topic, and to be honest with you, it's so up in the air, like you said, that most books have taken down all odds on both teams, right? We do have odds, for example, on the Packers week one game against the Saints. They're going to go to New Orleans. Saints are laying 2.5. So if you've got a feel for how that's going to play out, you can bet it, but let's be honest, who's going to start at quarterback for the Saints? Right? We're talking about Aaron Rodgers. We have no idea who's starting for the Saints. Is it going to be Hill or is it going to be Winston? So you can, if you feel like you've got good information or you want to take a gamble, you can put yourself ahead of the curve. Conversely, Jacksonville, who went 1-15 last year, is laying 2.5 points at Houston. If you think Deshaun Watson's going to play in that game, that's a pretty good price. I know Houston's going to stink, but Jacksonville laying points on the road with a rookie head coach who's never coached in the NFL before and a rookie quarterback is a tough thing. So back to the question at hand. How would I play it? It's a stay away for both. I would look for the ancillary effects. And what I mean by that is, with Denver, when the word got out that they could be very interested and very close to getting a deal done with Aaron Rodgers, that had an effect on a lot of odds, not just theirs. It dropped Kansas City's price to win the division significantly. The Chiefs were minus 600 to win the AFC West. That means you have to risk $600 to win 100. But once those rumors started, Kansas City dropped all the way down to minus 280. So instead of risking $600 to win $100, you're only risking $280 to win 100. Still a risk, but let's ask ourselves, what happens if Aaron Rodgers doesn't go to Denver? I'm getting the Chiefs at a discounted price. And even if Rodgers does go to Denver, it's not a guarantee they get by the Chiefs. It would be accurately priced at minus 280. So that's what I was looking for with the whole scenario.
That's a great find right there. I'm laying all that money on Kansas City. Even if Rodgers goes to Denver, I'd still probably take Kansas City to win the division.
Easy. It's only May. Easy.
You're going to bet against the Chargers there, your quarterback, Justin right. Herbert.
He's going to be the GOAT in the future, just not quite ready yet. Joe Fortenbaugh is our guest, ESPN Daily Wager. Catch him tonight as well over on 910 ESPN Portland, 6 o'clock. They have a special show just talking about all the angles of gambling in the NFL. It's going to be a ton of fun to listen to as you're getting kind of a glimpse of it right now. When everybody's going to spend the first couple of weeks of the season talking about one matchup, and I'm already tired of it, but I know by the time it kicks off, I'm going to watch it. Who are you gambling on, Belichick or Brady?
Oh, wow. So I think that's what, like week four, week six?
Week four, yeah.
Week four, yeah.
All right, so we got an advanced line on that. It's going to be the Buccaneers laying a few points against New England. That's an interesting one because when it comes to Tampa Bay, they're returning all 22 starters from last year's Super Bowl team. And some people could say, well, they won the Super Bowl. Maybe they come in lazy. I don't know. With a guy like Tom Brady, it's tough to bet against a team not showing up, right? So you figure you got continuity on the coaching staff, continuity on the roster, leadership with Brady, a lot of confidence. And the thing about that team is they got better and better as the season went on. They came off that late end of season bye, and then they went undefeated the rest of the way. They really corrected some of their issues that they were having early in the season. So I think they're going to get off to a better start this year. The big question mark is New England. How are they going to look, right? Like last year, it wasn't all that impressive, but look at what they were dealing with. Newton had absolutely no weapons around him whatsoever. You had a bunch of guys on both sides of the ball that opted out due to COVID, and Belichick still got him to the finish line at what, like 7 wins? So now here we go. Is it going to be Newton or is it going to be Mac Jones? That's a big question. But this team spent a lot of money in free agency, and they've worked to upgrade the roster. Plus, 5 or 6 key guys like Dante Hightower are coming back after sitting the season out due to COVID. So it should be a better roster. Obviously, the game plan is going to be very tight. Both guys are going to want to win that game. Right now, for me, and sometimes we've got to be able to do this in gambling, it's a stay away. I'm going to sit back. I want to see how New England looks early in the season, and then I'll reassess as we get closer to kickoff.
Joe, who made the move in the offseason, signed a guy, brought him in, and makes you kind of reassess maybe your position thought on the team once the schedule comes out? They have this guy. Who was the team that made that move?
All right, so really good question there. I would say for me, the thing that stood out, it wasn't one move. It was a series of moves that when you put it all together, puts the team in a much better position than people realize. And I think it's the Minnesota Vikings. All right, their win total's 8.5. Yeah. It's a tough schedule down the stretch. I like the over. Mike Zimmer's a defensive mind, and he said at the end of last season that that was the worst defense he's ever coached in his life. And he's been coaching defense in the NFL since the early 90s. That says something. But it also says this. They identified their weakness, and then they went out and they took the steps necessary to correct their weakness. They signed Dalvin Tomlinson to shore up the defensive line. They brought in Patrick Peterson and Mackenzie Alexander to help out at the cornerback position. Right? They bolstered the defense, and they've already got a top five offense by many metrics. Passing, scoring, total yardage, all that stuff. Remember another thing about Minnesota, all right? They were 3-5 at home last year, but they didn't have any fans in the stands. They're one of the teams in the NFL that benefits the most from home field advantage and crowd noise. That dome is extraordinarily loud, especially when the opposition gets down in the red zone. The year before, they were 6-2 at home. Last year, they're 3-5 with no fans. I think the home field advantage, coupled with the additions on defense, put Minnesota in a position to be a threat. And their win total is only 8.5. And remember, 17 games this season. So we only need them to go 9-8 in order to cash that. Yep. Plus, with Detroit down, you figure that's two wins. You should be able to split with the Bears. And if Rodgers leaves Green Bay, that's a great situation for Minnesota, who's also plus 120 to make the playoffs. So the Vikings are a team who, through free agency and the draft, really impressed me.
I'm writing that down, locking that Vikings bet in. Blow
I'm
that
surprised
Viking
you didn't
horn,
have
baby.
It already. Your boy Kirk Cousins,
my boy
man.
Kirkers. Let's go. Joe Fortenbaugh, guys. Daily Wager on ESPN. Hear more on 910 tonight at 6 o'clock. Special NFL preview show. I know you just highlighted Minnesota. Are there any other over-unders that just like jump off the page at you say, I love that bet, love that bet?
Yeah, I'm a Philadelphia guy. I'm from the area. I'm betting the under on the Eagles, 7 wins. I know. Thank God I'm talking to you guys in Portland, so hopefully there's not a lot of Eagle fans getting upset or family members listening right now. But the reality of the situation is they're not good. They don't have a bye until week 13 or 14, which is dreadful. In addition to that, the first 7 games of the season, they could be an underdog in every one of those games. And they're likely going to be an underdog in every one of those games. They got a rookie head coach. They got a quarterback who's only started 4 games. They got a rookie wide receiver, Devontae Smith. They got a second-year receiver in Jalen Reagor, who's only caught 31 career passes. There are a lot of issues there. I think that team's in a rebuild, but they don't want to admit it because they don't want to scare off the fans. So they're trying to pretend like they're going to compete, but the reality of the situation is it's a rebuild, and it's going to take some time. Under 7 wins on Philly. I'd also go under 9.5 wins on the Tennessee Titans. A lot of people think I'm crazy going against Mike Vrabel and what he's done with that franchise since he took over. But I want to point something out. They're another team with a late bye, week 13. The 7 games before that bye, Buffalo, Kansas City, at the Colts, at the Rams, hosting the Saints, hosting Houston, that's a win, and then at New England. That is a brutal stretch of games for a team that was number one in turnover differential last year. Turnovers are one of the biggest predictors of wins, but to be number one 1 year, how are you going to maintain that? It's damn near impossible. If the turnovers fall off, the wins are going to fall off. They were 7-2 in one-score games last year. They should experience some regression there as well. And they had an 11-5 record despite a point differential of plus 52. That's more indicative of a 9-win team. So I think they were a little bit beefed up last year due to some good fortune, I would say. But I think they're going to regress back to earth. Tough schedule. They lost their offensive coordinator to Atlanta. I would say Tennessee under 9.5 wins as well.
The NFC West, Joe, is going to be really tough. We know that. Cardinals, their over-under, I think, is at 8. I don't know how you feel about them, but who cares? The Niners are at 10. The Rams are at 10.5. The Hawks are sitting there at 10, and we have the Hawks on our radio station. How are you viewing Seattle coming into the year? Russell Wilson disgruntled. Seems okay now, but this is a big year, it feels like, for that franchise with where Russell Wilson and them sit.
It's tough to bet against Seattle because Russell Wilson is able to overcome so much more than a lot of people realize. You know, there are some metrics out there that point towards teams either getting better or getting worse. And yet Seattle has continued to power through it despite the metrics pointing to regression over the last few years. I'll give you one. Since 2019, they are 19-6 in one-score games. That's 76%. That's absolutely insane. One-score games are essentially coin flip toss-ups, right? You miss some field goals here at the buzzer. They make some field goals at the buzzer. You turn it over in the red zone. They turn it over in the red zone. Over a large enough sample, you should be .500 in one-score games. They're 76% towards the win in one-score games. That's eventually going to regress. New offensive coordinator, some issues on the offensive line. And then I look at the schedule. They're going to be on the road against the Colts in week one. That's a tough one. Hosting Tennessee in week two, who I think they beat. Week three at Minnesota. That's Minnesota's first home game. Vikings open up with back-to-back road games, and then they're going to host Seattle in week three. That's going to be tough. Like we mentioned earlier, Saints in week seven, they're off the bye. Mm-hmm. Jags in week eight, they're off the bye. A lot of pitfalls on the schedule. So when you're talking about a 10-win total, I lean to the under for Seattle, but it's not going to surprise me at all if I would lose money there because Russ is so good. He's been able to cover up so many problems for so long.
Yeah, one of those teams every year we kind of discount them when they find a way to win the division, it feels like.
Hey, Joe, quickly for you, do you think the bettors of the Derby should get the second-place bettors? Should they get money? Should that change in horse racing where the original horse is disqualified and yet – the paycheck goes to the second place horse, but the gamblers, they get to cash in on the original winner, and the second place winners don't get that money.
It's too messy. I agree. It's a total rip job that you end up in that situation. But what happens when a fighter in UFC or in boxing tests positive after a test that he wins, right? Like, right. I've been in a lot of situations where I've had that happen. I'd love my money back, but I'm not getting that. You know, they, what about these college teams that cheat, then they have to vacate an entire season? Well, all the money I lost on those games, do I get that back as well? Vegas does the best it can, and I'll tell you what, that Kentucky Derby thing, it's a mess. It's a real mess that that happens to a lot of people, but unfortunately that's the business we're in. And we always have to realize, check the rules of your sports book, especially with COVID and everything that's been happening. You got to see, for season win totals, how many games are action, how many innings are action, all that stuff. Always be aware of the rules. Worst bet of my life, two seasons ago I had the Warriors under for their season win total, right? Before COVID shut everything down, it was already done. They weren't going to be able to get their over, but because they didn't play the minimum amount of games, I didn't get to cash in on that bet. It was refunded, even though mathematically there was no way for them to go over. So there's tough beats left and right. You just try to persevere and work through it.
Yeah, great stuff. Joe Fortenbaugh, Daily Wager on ESPN. You can hear him tonight over on 910 ESPN Portland, the special Daily Wager radio show at 6 p.m.
That's gambling,
be talking
cocaine, man. That was great.
All stuff NFL, man. You got us, Jack. Thanks so much for the time this morning. We appreciate it, and hopefully we can do it again here soon.
Yeah, boys, it was my pleasure. Portland's one of my favorite cities. Thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you soon.
Love it. Joe Fortenbaugh of ESPN. There was a lot to chew on from that interview, including his love for the Minnesota Vikings. He likes the under potentially for Seattle because of, as he pointed out, some of the pitfalls in their schedule. And there's one team that we did not talk about in that segment that needs to be talked about that was kissed by the NFL gods. We'll get to that coming up next on The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Well, I'm still trying to digest what Joe Fortenbaugh brought to the table. That was awesome. Really fun to talk to him. We'll have to do that more regularly throughout the NFL season, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't get jacked listening to that dude talk gambling. And, you know, the unfortunate thing with the shorter windows we get in the traditional radio format is we didn't get to the Chargers. And I'm picking the Chargers. I think they're going to the playoffs this year. I'm bad in on the Chargers.
I could see that. The Raiders, according to the metrics as of now, have maybe the hardest schedule in the NFL.
I'm betting the under. Unless they trade for Rodgers, sure, I don't trust Gruden.
So that could knock them down a peg. And who knows what. If Denver doesn't get Aaron Rodgers, too, I would pick the Chargers to finish ahead of them.
Fun fact about the Broncos. I saw this yesterday, and this kind of blew my mind. Do you know that this is the first year, it's going to be the first season since 1991 they didn't get a Monday Night Football game?
Wow.
Think about that run for a second here, Bob. That to us seems like 10 years ago.
Wow.
But it's 2021.
Really?
Yes. The first season since 1991, the Denver Broncos have not had a Monday Night Football game.
Very interesting. I feel like they've been one of those staples on like the opening Monday Night.
They're always like the first or second game, right?
Like at 4 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah. And they've had some seasons where they may not have deserved it.
Sure.
Like last year, why should they have been on Monday Night Football?
Should not have been. Remember they won that. I think it was the first. Wasn't it an early Monday Night game when they played the.
I don't know.
It was supposed to be the opening of the stadium. That's why they got it, which is why they're doing it again this Monday night.
You know, and I'll throw this out. This is going to upset some of our AFC West fans. I know Bronco fans are big in this area, sure. Raider fans. I don't know what it is, and I know I might be alone on an island here. I have no vested interest. It doesn't even get me mildly excited, the AFC West quote-unquote rivalries.
No, it doesn't.
Oakland and Denver, Denver and Kansas City, Kansas City and Vegas. Like, yeah. Those don't excite me. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm not a fan of those teams.
You didn't grow up in the AFL because those were all the AFL teams that came over in the merger.
So that would be people of your age.
Yes.
Okay. So maybe
because
that's
I
the
was
difference.
Still, I had Seahawks season tickets for a couple years when I was living up in Seattle when they were still in the AFC West, and the Seahawks Raiders rivalry was off the charts.
Who like, won most of those games?
Back then,
was it pretty split?
Even
okay,
was fairly even. Hmm. But yeah, there would be a ton of Raiders fans that would usually come up from Oakland for those games, and it was on.
Like if Herbert is to emerge as the guy we think he's going to emerge as, if Denver, it just depends on the team too. Like if Denver is actually really good, okay, I'm excited for the game. But when it's kind of run of the mill, you really don't get me personally excited going Sunday Night Football, Raiders and Broncos. I'm kind of just like, man.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know how much of that, too, has to do with two of the teams in the division have moved in the last 3 years.
No, that has nothing to do with me. I don't give a rip.
Okay.
Like, I'm glad they're
well, I think
in
it
Vegas.
Changes the – well, no, I'm with you on that. But I think when you take them out of a city, you put them in a new city, like fans in L.A. have no rivalries with – either, you know, the Denver Broncos. I don't know.
Well, there aren't any fans in L.A.
Sure,
so.
It changes the equation a little bit in my mind. It's weird. That's one of the divisions that has had a lot of movement.
Yeah, that's a generational thing that is, you know, rivalries now, unless something starts heating up, unless one of these other AFC West teams starts regularly causing a problem for the Chiefs, mm-hmm. whether it's the Chargers or the Raiders, whoever it might be, and they spark it again where you have games late in the regular season that will determine who's going to be the one seed or who's going to win the division. You need that again.
Like, I feel that way about every divisional rivalry, though. Like the NFC East divisional rivalries do nothing for me. Philly playing Dallas, like I don't care.
When Philly and New York and Dallas are good, I don't root for any of those, and I hate the Cowboys, but those will get me.
That's East Coast bias is what that is.
The NFC North, I'm kind of in on that. Like when the Bears are relevant, when the Packers and they have been good, maybe you get a surprise, sneaky good Lion team. Vikings are one of those categories. I mean, like that.
The Steelers-Ravens over the last decade.
I would say over the last decade, the two rivalries that have been the best are Baltimore-Pittsburgh and then San Francisco-Seattle for that brief moment when they were both
the rivalry is always hot in the region.
No doubt about it.
But then when you have two franchises that are amongst the top teams in that conference, that's when it gets to the national relevance.
And look, there's a lot like AFC East. I don't really care about those quote unquote rivalries. The AFC West, I'll tell you the one I least care about. AFC South. Get out of here.
Houston, Jacksonville, Tennessee.
What are we doing?
Nobody watches that division. Nobody cares.
No. And I feel like the NFC South, it's better. Cause like Brady's there. Breeze was there for so long. And the Panthers were once good. You know, it's kind of a similar feel, though. They don't feel like real rivalries.
Somebody texted, Chiefs fan texted and says, because all the teams haven't been good for the same time for a prolonged period of time. That's what you're missing. Because you look at Baltimore-Pittsburgh, you had two teams that were good competing for Super Bowls for the better part of a decade. That's what makes a good rivalry when it's year in and year out you're playing. And in the AFC West, you just haven't had that. That's what you need to make it a great rivalry.
What's your favorite rivalry in every division?
Oh, God, you're going to ask me this against the clock, really?
Mine is Pats and Dolphins in the East. I know the Bills just won it. You don't want to dive into this against the clock?
We can do it in the next segment. How about that? Let me think about my favorite rivalry in every division.
We don't have to do that.
I didn't talk about there's more schedule notes to get to. You could spend 3 hours on this stuff. It's the NFL schedule release. We get jacked up for it. We can go Francesa, win-loss, win-loss, win-loss through every single team, all 32 in the NFL. What do you think? Final hour. Let's do it. One by one, by one, by one. No, but there is one team that was kissed by the NFL schedule gods, and I've been teasing it. I want to get to that coming up next. And does it change your opinion of the division that they're in? And their chances of winning that division. We'll start the final hour there. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.